Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real.
The first meeting for the FOMC in 2023 just concluded. And when Mr. Powell was asked about how he felt about the recent trend of financial conditions having eased, Jerome Powell said this, that financial conditions have actually tightened significantly. But the facts are that they have loosened considerably over the past 4 months. His ignorance regarding the reality behind the recent significant relaxation of financial conditions gave a green light for the market rally to continue. So in fact, Mr. Powell said two more hikes ahead of us and they will be done. Nevertheless, the belief on Wall Street is that all we need to have is a Fed that pivots to stopping rate hikes in order to enter into a new bull market. Well, let's see what history has to say about what happens when an economy is weakening into a recession, and then the Fed actually starts to cut rates, not just stop hiking them, actually starts cutting rates. Let's see what the data says. The Fed started to cut rates in January of 2001. 3 months later, the S&P 500 was down 8.5%. 6 months later, it was down 11.3%. 12 months later, it was down 17.3%. And then it troughed out at being down over 50% a couple of years later. The Fed started cutting rates in September of 2007. 3 months later, the market was down 3.8%. 6 more months later, the S&P was down 13.4%. And 12 months later, it was down 23.6%. And again, it bottomed out over 50% lower by September, by March of 2009. But you say, Mr. Pinto, this time isn't at all as bad as the global financial crisis and the NASDAQ bubbles. Okay. I think they are, and eventually I'll be proven right this year. But let's just say I'm wrong, and they're just a regular run-of-the-mill recession. Let's see how the market did during the 73 stagflation recession. 3 months after the first rate cut, not stopping to hike rates, after the first rate cut, the S&P was down 10.8%. 6 months, it was down 16.6%. 12 months, it was down 31.8%. In the 1981 recession, 3 months after the first rate cut, the market was actually up 1%. But 3 months later, it was down 6.5%, and 12 months later, it was down 13.8%. So again, this shows you that even after the Fed starts to cut rates, it isn't a good time to go headlong, crazy, over your skis into the stock market. However, this time, it isn't likely that the Fed can cut rates early and substantially given the recent 40-year high rate in consumer price inflation. Keep in mind that stagflation recessions of the 80s and the 70s, during that time, the amount of debt was nothing in comparison to today, and equity valuations were sublime. For instance, in 1980, the P/E ratio on the S&P 500 was 7. Not 19, like it is now. Now let's take a closer look at this particular liquidity cycle. 40% of banks are tightening lending standards. In the United States, the M2 money supply is at a current level of $21.2 trillion, down from $21.3 trillion last month, and down from $21.5 trillion 1 year ago. This is a change of 0.7% from last month and down 1.31% from a year ago. This is the first such decline in M2 money supply ever. Meanwhile, the cost of money is rising, Powell raised rates by 25 basis points today, bringing the overnight interbank lending rate to 4.5% to 4.75%. And that is the fastest pace of tightening in history. Even though he has reduced the pace of it, it's still the fastest pace of tightening in history. And the Fed is still erasing the base money supply at a record clip as well. Also, the personal savings rate is near an all-time low. Real incomes are still negative. And the reverse wealth effect from falling equity and real estate values, and you add that in, and you have one of the bleakest liquidity environments in history. Yes, I said falling equity prices. The S&P 500 is still down over 9% year over year, and the NASDAQ is down over 17% year over year, even after this recent bear market rally and today's reflex euphoria over the fact that Powell doesn't give a damn that financial conditions are easing. There are now more people falling behind on car payments today than there were during 2009. And 2009, by the way, is in the direct wake of the financial crisis. The number of people who are behind on their auto loans, more than 2 months behind on their car loans, according to Cox Automotive, was up 26.7% this December compared to a year ago. There is also a threefold increase in car repossessions now than there were before the pandemic. And according to J.D. Power, in December of 2022, so the end of last year, the average monthly car payment was around $718. Banks are in big trouble. Because auto loans are just a small portion of the consumer and corporate loan market that is headed for default. According to a survey from Cision released on January 25th, 74% of Americans are now living paycheck to paycheck. It's a record high. So why are stocks rallying, you ask? Well, one reason is that the Treasury General account is offsetting QT. And that is going to be the case from now until about June, or sooner, that ends sooner if the debt ceiling is raised before. If it isn't raised by June, the Treasury General account should be exhausted. There's about $450 billion left in it. And just briefly, what is a Treasury General account? Well, the Treasury parks money at the Federal Reserve, okay, excess income. They park it at the Treasury, at the Federal Reserve as reserves. And when the Treasury needs money, they draw on that account. They take that Fed credit or reserves, turn it into cash, credit, and send it out to people, obligations from the Treasury. Well, when it's parked at the Fed, it's just fallow money. But when they draw on it, it becomes new money that's circulated in the economy. And that's exactly what they're doing right now. They're drawing on that Treasury General account. Yellen is doing that. Treasury Secretary Yellen is doing that, taking that down, that account down way below where it should be, where they want it to be, so they don't have to issue new debt. They're just drawing down the Treasury account, which is actually offsetting QT, as I said. And then, if it's not settled by June, if we do default on our debt, then the U.S. will have to start denying or reneging on its obligations. Now, that may not be a technical default because Treasury just won't be able to sell new debt to meet all contracts that they have agreed upon. In other words, money already appropriated by Congress won't get funded by new Treasury issuance. But there's still going to be revenue coming into the Treasury, and that revenue will be spent. It's called the balanced budget amendment, a forced balanced budget amendment, and I think that would be spectacularly bullish for the United States economy in the long run. Now, despite the fact that Jerome Powell gave a all clear signal to buy stocks because of his willingness to ignore the loosening up of financial conditions, there are still a lot of dangers out there in the world. And I just want to touch on one very briefly. Let's go to Japan and talk about core consumer price inflation. It increased in Tokyo by 4.3% year over year. That's the highest inflation rate for the citizens of Japan in 42 years, 4.3%. Now, Would you buy a Japanese government bond yielding 0.5%? That's the top end of the range. It's going to be 0.5% or less going out 10 years when inflation is 4.3%? No, you wouldn't. And neither would anybody else. And that is why the Bank of Japan is forced to buy every single newly issued Japanese government bond with newly issued Japanese yen. Now, that is causing inflation to start to run intractable. It's getting out of hand. It's at a multi-decade high. And since they can't allow inflation to rise forever, they're going to have to stop printing yen. But if they stop printing yen, that means they're going to allow JGBs, their yields, to rise uncontrollably, way above 4% in a matter of minutes. That's the kind of thing that you have to have in the back of your mind. That's the kind of thing I have to watch and model before you just run off and say, okay, you know, Jerome Powell's dovish, so let's just go back to a 60-40 portfolio and go to sleep. We're not going to do that here. When that happens, I don't have a date for you, but I'm watching it, I'm modeling it, and I will be able to react ahead of time before such a calamity happens, because that's going to be very detrimental to this Goldilocks scenario that is pervading around the world. You know, China reopening. As a matter of fact, there's four reasons why this rally has occurred since early January, and I'm going to go into each one in detail next week. But for now, I just want to talk about the portfolio before I leave you today. The good news is we escaped a great deal of the carnage that took place last year. In fact, we would have been positive on the year if not for the drubbing that Treasury market, the whole complex of the Treasury market took. It was down as much as the NASDAQ. It was down 30%. That's what the NASDAQ was down. And now in 2023, the IDEC model, the Inflation, Deflation, and Economic Cycle model, saved us from being overly bearish. I mean, we could have come into this year being extremely bearish, but we were not, because part of the model contains things like financial conditions. And that kept us from having too many shorts in the portfolio and not adding longs, like drug companies, like utilities, like gold. In fact, today we even bought at a much lower price. I bought it hours ago before the market shot up. We bought an international high dividend yielding emerging market ETF. So, in conclusion, phase two of this bear market is still dead ahead, and it will be the direct result of the lagged monetary effects of 500 basis points worth of tightening plus quantitative tightening, which is the destruction of $1 trillion per year of the base money supply, which will cause one of the sharpest drops in earnings per share on the S&P 500 and in the overall market that we have ever seen. You know, while Wall Street is celebrating the reduction in the pace of rate hikes, the truth is the cost of money is still rising into an underlying economy that is faltering. That is a fact, even though investors are choosing to ignore it for now. The good news here is that stocks are now set to crash during phase two of the bear market, but this time from a much higher level.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you're not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.